It's go time.
Ready? Oh, Scott, my watch says 4:59, but we go by that one. Let's call this meeting to order. It's the April 26th, 2022 regular meeting of the Sewer Commission. Roll call, please.
Yep. Commissioner Mastalotto.
Yes.
Commissioner Fairbanks.
Yes. Here.
Chairman Thompson.
Here.
Commissioner Reynolds.
Here.
Commissioner Hatley.
Here.
Commissioner Riston.
Here.
All here.
Great. Let's stand salute. Salute. Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I want to recognize there are no visitors, but this is the time to acknowledge visitors. Let's get right past that. Approve the board meeting minutes.
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes.
I'll second it.
So just so we're clear, this is the minutes from both the regular meeting and the special meeting on April 13th. So the regular meeting of March 22nd, special meeting of April 13th.
Uh-huh. So moved.
So second.
I don't know how we take
votes. So here. All in favor?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Second? Or both? Seconds? Great. Number six is authorization of warrants.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Reynolds and I went over the warrants yesterday.
Everything appeared to be in order. I make a motion that we accept the warrants.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Right, number seven, fiscal reports.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we included the fiscal reports in the packets for your guys' review. Everything was in order.
Make a motion that we accept the fiscal reports.
I'll second it.
First and second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? You guys are moving too fast.
It's a good
item number eight, discussion.
I'll make a motion.
Make a motion. Wait, the first reading, the second, the third. Discussion of manager's emergency spending limit.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So as we all know, this past month we had an emergency failure of our pipeline on 162, on Highway 162 through the bridge. I had to call around, get permission to spend money, and Commissioner Reynolds at the special meeting wanted to agendize for us to discuss possibly raising the emergency spending limit for the manager. So I agendize it. It is attached to a policy, which is policy number 3110. So today's item can only be discussion, and then we will have to agendize any action that you guys want to take for next meeting because it does involve the policy. So we'd have to change the policy as well.
What I was thinking was that we raise it to 25,000 in emergency situations, and emergency situations can be determined by the manager.
I think that that's an appropriate amount. Like I said, at the last, when I had to make the phone call last time, I called Duke Sherwood to come out, and that was a $24,000 bill for him to come out for a day, a full day's work for this whole full crew. So, you know, being able to have the authority to at least get an emergency team on site to start fixing stuff, I think is appropriate. And I think $25,000 is more than enough to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable, especially since like everything nowadays is just going up in price. So it's important to have quick responses in emergency situations. So that's what says emergency spending limit. So there's no point in having a number if it's not going to help in an emergency.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Now, if it's a real emergency where it's spilling into the Feather River, and let's say the 25 isn't enough, what would you do at that point?
So at that point, I would call each one of you individually and say, I'm going to have to spend more money, kind of get your verbal yes, and then we'd have to have a special meeting to make that official. But at that, I would get the wheels in motion based off the conversation that I had with each one of you guys.
But if it was an emergency spilling into the river, you would just get verbal and move forward
yep.
with it? Okay.
essentially what we did.
That's basically what we did last time. I called Chairman Thompson. He wasn't available to answer, but he was available by text. So I texted him, said, I'm going to have to spend it. He said, yep, understand. And then I called and talked to Attorney Huber to let him know that that's the route that I had to go. And he said, sounds good, as long as he's on board. And then after that, I sent out the emails to everybody else just to keep everybody in the loop.
So that was the only thing I was going to say would be, is there another caveat? We could raise it to the $25,000, but on that, have something in place, a verbiage that says that you could speak to the chair or any other member in the chair's absence or unable to get to them to be like, yeah, go ahead, so that you're not having to try to call everybody, that if you just at least spoke to one board member, and they were like, sure, absolutely. I don't know if that's something that we could put in the verbiage, or if we even need that verbiage.
What I'm thinking is, he actually should go through the attorney or speak to the chair like you recommended, because it could be considered a serial meeting if you speak to all of us.
Gotcha.
Right. Yeah, if I could, commissioners, one of the things I would recommend is that you set an appropriate amount for him to use within his discretion. And then if there is an emergency that he needs to go over, that you can have a higher amount that he needs to talk with the chair or vice chair and council, to get approval for the higher amount if it's truly an emergency that risks environmental contamination, ground contamination, water contamination, something along those lines. But that certainly is something that you can do with an option of either talking with the chair or the vice chair, or the chair/vice chair and legal counsel. Any of those options would work, but I think that is a good idea.
Because obviously we all sitting here, if something was that kind of an emergency and we had to spend the money, then we need to spend the money. That's how I'm looking at it. Mm-hmm. I know you're not going to think, it was an emergency, I went out and bought a new truck. You know that? We get that, and we know that that's not how you're going to run it. But
what kind of truck?
Something in place that you could go ahead and
make stuff start happening. Yep.
You know, if that's something we'd have to do.
And I agree with that too. We just but we're all, everybody here is reasonable and we all get along, but I'm telling you, being a part of people trying to make something out of nothing, I recommend that you only speak to the chair or the vice chair or the, because if you speak to two voting members,
don't want to be the hub.
You have a Brown Act violation.
Yep. Understood.
What I want to know is, what kind of truck can you get for $25,000?
Nothing too good these days.
Yeah. Can we put something in the language then? If it's a spill, it's in relationship to the
river
or contamination of, whatever language that might be.
Yep. Where. So I'll have to get together with Attorney Huber here, and we'll figure out language. Correct, Scott? Well, you don't want me messing with this.
Because it sounds like for me from the...
Yeah, we can...
This board,
we can come up with appropriate language that would provide for in the event of potential environmental contamination.
But isn't everything, if you have a spill, basically isn't everything that, no matter where it is considered a hazardous?
True, but only in our system, in our collection system, pretty much that bridge is the only place where we couldn't just get out there and kind of go about business ourselves.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, anywhere else we can kind of, because since that's a force main, there's no way to do anything else. With the rest of the system, it's not a force main, so it's just gravity. So you can crack it open, you can get in there, and it's not going to blow water out. You can fix it, and it's fine. With the force main, as soon as you open it up, it's pressurized.
Okay. So it has a special.
Exactly. So that was a scenario where we needed experts on the ground to do it.
Right.
And my crew wasn't that.
So the 25 would be a more of a worst case scenario?
Pretty much. Yeah. It would be like the scenario that we just faced, which for us in our collection system, that's about worst case scenario for us, that bridge.
The thing about it is he's the one with the license. He's the one on the hook if this thing spills. So he's going to do whatever it takes to get that stopped or get it contained, and then he's going to throw himself at the mercy of the board. But that's him that's on the hook for that. So we understand that completely. You do what you have to do. But as far as money wise, we're
I'm would make a recommendation that we would give the manager a emergency spending limit of $25,000. If he confers with the chair, I would recommend that it goes up to 50.
I like that too.
Yeah.
Okay.
25. But I know we're not voting on this today, right. But so what you're saying is 25 emergency, he can do it. Mm-hmm. But if he speaks to the chair, I can go up to 50.
Chair, anything chair. Over yeah. that, we're gotcha. All getting involved.
Special meeting, right. Yep.
Yeah, okay. We're all going to be down here in our fuzzy slippers. And
I don't wear fuzzy slippers.
Maybe I do.
Okay.
So we put that on the next agenda.
Yes, we'll agendize that for next month. So I'll be in conversation with you, Scott, to get the language nailed down on that.
Number 9, discussion and direction to...
That sounds good.
Yeah. Discussion and direction to explore the purchase of land for the Ruddy Creek Pump Station upgrade.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So when we first were... when the board first approved us to go and get the design done for the new Ruddy Creek Pump Station, we had talked to the property owners over there at next to Ruddy Creek, which is the old Wheeler property, if you guys are familiar, and they weren't interested in selling at that time. And then we were called, what, maybe 2-3 weeks ago by former manager Scott Coach, who had run into the lady. Her name is Dina Hubert. I forget which way she pronounces it. And she had told him that she had changed her mind and she was interested. So we had a meeting with her, a preliminary meeting, just to kind of feel her out and see if it was a realistic option. So you can see here's Ruddy Creek Pump Station here. Here is her. Here is that Wheeler property here, this big part. So we are looking to purchase just from about right here over this, and it's about a quarter acre is what we would need. The reason I am bringing this to you, obviously, for the purchase, it will cost money, but it's going to cost money before we even get to that purchase point, and you would probably be a great resource here, mm-hmm. Commissioner Masolato, because we got to do a lot line adjustment. There's
title report.
There's costs that will come up before we can even buy the property from her, and so I need permission from you guys at this point just to use SCORE's time and energy and resources to go and find out what those costs would be. Now, obviously, once we find out those costs, we'll have to come back and have another meeting to say, this is what it's going to cost to do this. Do you guys want to do that? Unless it was below my $5,000, which I think some of it would be, but I would be looking for authorization from you guys at that point anyways. So just so we're all on the same page the whole way through this thing. But mainly today, I'm asking for permission to explore what it would take to purchase that property.
Mr. I would suggest that because that piece of property has no access off of Oro Dam, because I think that's a ditch.
Yep.
This is Ruddy Creek here, the tree line.
I would make sure that you have an easement or access at that main driveway to access that property, because I've had people buy property and sell property that had no access.
Gotcha. Yes, sir.
So I have a quick question. We briefly discussed this at our
Thermalito meeting.
So is she wanting to sell? Because I thought that there were possible talks of like future connections.
That's what she wants to do.
In lieu of pay?
Yes, she wants to trade it for services.
If she wants to put in a trailer park?
Yes, she wants to put in a mobile home park.
Or a mobile home park.
Yes.
So it isn't necessarily coming up with cash, but it would be future connections that fees were waived, or not waived, but...
Traded
in lieu of, okay.
Yes, sir. So she, and... We haven't got to a price. We haven't even talked price yet because, you know...
We've only had one meeting,
and I wanted to be in front of you guys before we got to that point. But from what we can tell, and Commissioner Masolato probably knows way better than us, it looks like that property should be, what, anywhere from $20,000 to $30,000. And the only way we're coming up with that number is we've looked at how much 5 acres costs in Oroville and divided it by
Quarter acre.
So, you know, who knows if that price is actually realistic. But after talking to manager Boucher at Thermalito, I mean, the most she's going to end up with here, if it's just straight across trade, would be like a sewer connection and a water service connection, and then like a manhole with a stub out for her to connect later on. And she'd still be getting a pretty good deal at that. If you traded dollar for dollar, she'd actually be making more money than that. But from what I could tell from talking to Jamie and our end of it, we thought that would be a fair deal for her. But like I said, we still would have all the costs that we would have to incur on the lot line adjustment, all that. And then that's only the beginning of it, because they're so far down the road on design for Rudy Creek Pump Station that we would have to have design changes. They would be minimal compared to the overall design, but there still would be design change costs as well.
And if nothing worked out, we could do eminent domain on the property in the worst case scenario.
We haven't even explored that.
Okay, I was just kidding.
That would be for Attorney Huber. I don't know on that one.
You still have to pay full market value.
Yeah, gotcha. That's eminent domain. You don't get it for free.
Gotcha.
You pay market value, which you're offering anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the big thing with that is if she has a mortgage on the property.
Gotcha.
That makes it very complicated. So that would probably be the first question I would ask her.
Okay.
Because any lot line has to be agreed to by the lender, and they may or may not agree to it.
Gotcha. Because she's got a loan on 7 acres, and now it's a loan on 6.75 acres.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Understood. Okay.
So yeah.
One of the other things, commissioners, that if you authorize Glenn to make this comment, one of the things that we sometimes can do as a public agency is, you can purchase property in an arm's length transaction, but do it, and I'll put it in quotes, under the threat of condemnation. Even though you've agreed on the price, it does give certain tax benefits to the seller of the property, which sometimes you can then get the property for a little bit less or get better terms. But you do have to advertise that it was, you know, and again, I'll put it in quotes, under the threat of condemnation. Not sure if you want him to entertain that at all, or keep that in your back pocket for later.
So this item right now primarily is to give direction, and I sound like the direction of this board is to go ahead and pursue that. Is that correct?
Yes.
Cool.
So you have a lot of questions.
Yeah, because we just wanted, I just didn't want to spend our time and energy on something that you guys had no interest in doing. So,
okay. A great location. I think your go-to from this board would be Commissioner Mastalotto.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Agreed. The big thing about this would be the huge benefit of purchasing the property would be the current Rudy Creek Pump Station could stay in operation until the new one was built, and then it would just be like a 2-hour break this pipe, connect this pipe, and we are off and running. Where in the configuration that it is now, we're going to have to bypass that station for a significant amount of time. And anytime you're bypassing, you're at the risk of spilling, because now you're not, you know, you just have pipes like we had on the bridge just laying on the ground, and it, you know, people can hit them with their vehicles, whatever. It's
stressful.
It's not a good situation. the other big benefit would be once we demo the current one, we have the new one for a future station. You have the old site to go ahead and build a whole new station that's upsized for any growth that happens out there, and then you can continually do that for the life of the station. Just move it back and forth whenever you need to upsize, rather than having to keep doing it on the same piece of property over and over and over. So to me, I think it is worthwhile, but that'll all have to, once we figure out how much money is associated with it, that'll be your guys' decision to make at that point.
Just a question. How much property, or how many of these pieces of property does SCORE own that we're not utilizing, if any?
There's at least three that I know of outside of the SCORE compound here. We have two lift station properties, this being one of them. Another one is the Feather River lift station right on the west side of the Feather River Bridge on Highway 162. And then there's one other piece of property just south of the mini storage on Feather River Boulevard. where our effluent line crosses Highway 70 there. Yep.
But we're using them.
We're using
okay. That one we have to maintain.
That one has nothing physically on the property,
but we do have to maintain it.
I know the city, when I came in, one of the first things I asked for was a list of all the properties and that was owned by the city. And the reason why was because I knew that they had owned several buildings with absolutely no reason to own them, other than they gave somebody, you know, money for it.
Yeah.
That paid a dollar, and then when they were selling them, they were selling them for a dollar. So we had 19 houses, all kinds of things that the city had no business owning. So we sold a lot of that. I believe we brought in close to $2 million into the general fund for that.
Yeah, we don't. We also have one more, the Lillipud.
Oh, yeah, the Lillipud vault
here at the corner, right in front of California Hot Woods, where Duke Sherwood's property runs up there.
But they have all our facilities on them?
Yeah, but that's it. We don't have any random properties that we own.
That we know of.
That we know of. Yeah. No, we don't. We got that APN list. We don't.
Yeah.
Great. Item number 10 is attorney's report. Mr. Huber?
Yeah, just very, very briefly, I am in discussions with the very initial discussions with the attorneys related to that, to the payment of the connection fee and the annual fee in advance of having an occupancy permit. I don't have anything to report other than discussions are ongoing as to sort of start to finish as to how those things have been established and the amounts of them, but we'll have a meeting next week. And I'll update the board accordingly.
Great. Manager's report.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So just to give you guys the full end of the full spectrum on that repair on Highway 162, we ended up finishing that the last Friday at 11 o'clock at night. Pretty sure we're going to come in underneath the spending allotment that you gave me. We haven't gotten a complete bill, a final bill from Duke Sherwood, but it did go at that time when the cost I knew was just for the Thursday repair, and it ended up going into Friday and then going into all the way till 11 o'clock at night Friday. So, but I do believe it'll be under the approved amount that you guys gave me.
What was that again?
$80,000. And once again, can't express enough how appreciative we were from all the three entities that helped and Duke Sherwood's crew. Thermalito bent over backwards for us. The city bent over backwards for us. Actually let us borrow their brand new water truck. Brand spanking new water truck, beautiful truck. They let us borrow it, and that was awesome. And Lillipud, the whole time, they were calling and saying, hey, anytime you need us, don't hesitate. So it was awesome to see the JPA work the way it was intended to work. It really was. So that went good. We do still have to get in there and figure out exactly why that problem happened. So we ended up having to replace about 10.5 foot of pipe, and it was rotten. And there's really no reason for it to be rotten. Our original theory of the bridge moving didn't hold water. At least that wasn't the cause. It might be moving, but it didn't. It wasn't the cause. So it wasn't the cause of our problem. We believe that there needs to be another air relief valve, so I've been in contact with the engineers to figure out how we would even go about, you know, inspecting the line or figuring out the problem, because it is a force main, so it's not like a regular sewer where you can just drop a camera down there and run it up and down. So in order to even inspect it, we'll have to bypass again, and it'll be a big ordeal. So obviously when that time comes, I'll fill you guys in and on cost and everything that'll have to happen there. But we do need to, I wouldn't feel comfortable just not going back in there and checking out why that happened in the first place, because 25-year-old ductile iron should not be in the condition that it was.
So what does force main mean?
Force main means it's being pumped. So there's no, like a regular sewer is gravity. So there's manholes every 500 feet.
Oh, okay.
And it's just flowing and the pipe's half full, whatever. A force main is, it's actually pumped up out of the pumps, and it's contained the whole way. It never loses pressure. It's forced by the pump the whole way.
Okay. Usually because it's got to go up and over an obstacle, like it's in a valley, so it's got to pump over a hill or over a bridge in this case.
Exactly. Okay, thank you.
So that it went good, but we need to get back in there and figure that one out. Then on here, so then we talked about the land acquisition for Rudy Creek, and The last thing on my manager's report was we met with State Parks and Lilliput, with Dave Goyer, the manager of Lilliput, and Vince Victorino, the foreman, and the State Parks crew and Bidwell Marina LLC about them dumping the wrong stuff into the sewer. They've been given, Dave's got on them several times and they keep giving him the lip service. Yeah, we won't do it, we won't do it. And then they've caught him several times doing it. So they have their fish cleaning stations tied into the sewer. Can't do that. It's a, I mean, just a blatant red flag. Can't do that. They pump out the pontoons of the houseboats. They have petroleum products in the pontoons. They're pumping that into the sewer. Can't do that. I mean, it's just it's ridiculous, honestly, that the state of California is breaking the state of California's rules, but we know how that works. So anyways, they were giving Dave the kind of the runaround, and so he asked me what my opinion would be, and I said, well, let's put him on a P2 permit. So that falls under the industrial pretreatment program here at SCORE, and basically comes with it the authority of the federal EPA. So if the state wants to tell the local guys, we don't care, though they can't tell that to Uncle Sam. So that's what we did, and we didn't really want to do that, but that's what we decided we kind of need to do. And we went up there and had a meeting with them, and I was super respectful, and I just told them, we're all on the same team, same thing that we've talked about here at the board. We want clean water to go into the river. Use us as a resource to get your water in the best condition it can before it goes into the sewer system, and we will help you every step of the way. So we're not trying to come at them like a big bad regulatory force. We're trying to come at them as a resource to help them get in compliance.
Educational.
Yeah, exactly. And they seemed very receptive to it at the time. So we'll see, you know, the main lady there, Chelsea, was just saying that they're having trouble getting the state to cut funds loose for certain things. So maybe if we tell the state it's going to cost them more to not cut the funds loose than it will to just fix their system, maybe we'll get some better results, but we'll see.
All your money on fellow shelter.
There you go. So that's it for the manager's report.
Do you want to talk about timeline for the project up here?
Oh, yep. Actually, Micah did bring up a good point. So the project up front has run into some time delays. Nothing really to do with the contractor or construction. It's lead time on electrical equipment. Like everything right now, it's just hard to get it. So Coleman Engineering is doing a pretty good job of trying to keep them on schedule, but they've just run into this snag getting electrical stuff. So they're trying to figure out exactly what their new completion date is going to be, but it looks like it's going to be later than the August 23rd date that we originally were
hoping for. I
think
they're looking at October?
October at
this point. A couple months behind?
Yeah.
Whatever they can afford. What's the liquidated damages?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're trying to avoid that for sure. So that's, and you know, they've been kind of in a little tussle with the Coleman Engineering, but that's why we're paying Coleman Engineering to have that tussle with them. So we'll see where that goes. But currently we are behind schedule a little bit, and they're confident that they can get back on schedule if they can get the stuff, but who knows if they'll get the stuff. So I'll keep you guys in the loop on that.
Great, thank you. On visitors' comments, I don't see any visitors, so we can just bypass that one, correct? Mm-hmm. And then number 13, commissioner and staff comments. Any comments from the staff? Or
I have a couple real quick. I'm trying to be super fast. I want to thank Mike and Glenn. They showed up at our last Thermalita Water and Sewer District Board meeting to give the board, full board, an update on the repairs for the pipe on going over the bridge. So it was very nice that you gentlemen came and spoke to the entire board and gave us a quick update and everything, and praised our staff and our manager. So it was greatly appreciated. Second piece is, and you're talking about the ductile iron not looking good. So you replaced 10 foot. So when you obviously cut it and replace, how did the other piece, you know, like the end piece that you cut, obviously there was issues with the leak. How did the iron look?
It looked better.
Piece that you cut, I guess.
It looked better. It didn't look great.
Okay.
Yeah, it looked better. And originally they had only cut out 2 feet, and they coupled it back in, and then we charged the line, and it blew another hole in the pipe.
Oh.
So that's why we ended up being there. We thought we were going to be done about 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon. We were all running around high fiving like, oh, we got through it. And then they gave me the call like, nope. And it's like, okay, great. But yeah, the condition on the two ends of the pipe that we cut, were far better than the part that we removed, but still enough to where I have the concern where I want to figure out what's going on.
So another quick and just a guesstimate, if you can, to replace the whole line going across there, how long is that?
It's a quarter mile.
It was about ductile iron.
Yeah, 1,500 feet or something like that is what we calculated out.
So from
any idea to replace that line, a guesstimate on cost, just out of curiosity. Oh, if you don't, that's fine.
I mean, this $800.
Yeah, it's a lot. $500,000, something million dollars. I mean, that's just total random guess.
Yeah.
But I think I don't think we would need to replace the whole 1,500 feet. Now, this is totally my just guess. Because we have another air relief valve below. I think worst case scenario, we'd have to replace from where we just cut it down to the neck to where the bypass port is, which is what, 250 feet?
Yeah,
275 feet, something like that. So we shouldn't have to replace that long. We would just have to if it's in
from
that
like
type of condition.
Down.
Yes, from the bridge abutment down to that bypass port. But we would probably also have to put in another vault and a air relief valve.
And which you replaced was with ductile iron?
Yes.
Okay.
But the recommendation from the engineers and the contractor was to put plastic back in if we were to replace a giant section.
Yeah, because I'm thinking if that iron eroded, I mean, you got 10 feet of bad pipe here, but each end looks good. It might be another 5 feet down here that you have another 10
bad
feet.
Spot. Yep. You just don't know unless we inspect it.
It's sewer gases.
Exactly. And that's very what it corrosive. Is. We think that it's this the way the design, we think that they needed an extra air relief. And so our running theory is that you're getting a full pipe coming up over the bridge, and once it breaks the crown of the bridge, it starts to fall via gravity, and then it compresses the gases back up the line right into that section. So right in that section where the full pipe comes over the crest of the bridge, that's where the pipe was rotten. So that's why that's our working theory. Yeah, and it's
probably a water hammer there.
And that we're thinking there's a water hammer happening as well. The water's meeting the gas right in that spot and creating issues. So, and the engineers were like, that's a pretty good theory. That seems like it's working. So, and we definitely heard when we charged the line, we heard it.
It was sounding like an air compressor.
You could hear all the gas, you know, running in that line. So there is definitely something happening. It needs to have probably another air relief valve in there to get rid of that pressure.
So would the gases that are going, being forced back up, is it the toxicity of the gases that are...
Yeah, so hydrogen sulfide gas is terribly corrosive. It'll eat concrete, it'll eat the iron.
Right.
So that ductile iron pipe is coated with a mortar on the inside of it. It has like a cement mortar lining,
right?
Because the iron will just get destroyed immediately by sewer water. But so there's a couple running theories of what could have happened if it's not the gas. You know, if you bang that pipe and some of that mortar falls off on the inside of the pipe and then that iron's exposed to raw sewer, you're going to get a hole.
Right.
But I mean, there was a hole in the side of the pipe this big.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, huge. So, you know, there's no excuse for there to be a hole in the side of an iron pipe that big. Like, there's just...
But it is the toxicity of the gases.
Yep.
Yeah, it's very corrosive.
Yeah.
It'll eat concrete eventually too.
Yeah.
Right. So is it also, you said that they're also like a water hammer, sort of like when a pump you get cavitation in a pump when it's not completely charged, is that the same kind of...
So water hammer, like if you turn on, you know, if you get all this water flowing this way really fast and then you just close the valve and you just deadhead it, and then that's a water hammer.
Right.
So what we think is happening is the gases are essentially deadheading the water. They're running into each other. As it fills up that pipe, the gas is coming back up the line, and then you got the full pipe, and boom, they hit, and water hammer right there.
Okay.
So that's our running theory. But we had a running theory that the bridge moved and pulled our... so I don't know if our running theories are great yet, but we'll figure it out after some inspection.
Okay.
Great. So, any other comments from this commission? All right. That adjourns our meeting today. The next meeting will be held on May 24th at 5 p.m.